Welcome, one and all. We are in the last week of the spring term, so we will not be meeting for 2 weeks. And then I think that, again, the general rule of thumb is if there's classes in session, we will have Greek Club. So, because I think I'm not actually traveling much. I'm holding still in many, many objects. Various persons are coming at me, so... All right, so we are in Acts chapter 2, and I'm pretty sure we are at verse 14. We got the initial description of the prophesying, the Spirit coming upon the 120 and so forth, and then where they're from, and the crowd's ambivalent reaction. Some are just astonished, and others are mocking, right? So that brings us to verse 14. So... All right, stathes de ha petras, sun tois hendeka ep eren tein phonein autu, kai ap ef thinksata autois. Andres, judaioi, kai hoi kat oi kuntes Yerusalem pantes. Tuta humin gnostan esto, kai en o tidzasta tairematamu. So, I start with a participle. Stathes is the aorist participle passive of histemi. The sixth principal part is estathein, right? And it has an intransitive active meaning, so just standing. And here, you know, it's probably falls into that pattern of what Daniel Wallace's grammar calls the attendant circumstance. So Peter stood and lifted up, right? But woodenly, standing, Peter with the 11. Now, ep aren in verse 14 is from ep iro, which just means to lift up. Iro means to lift or take. He lifted up the voice of him. And here's our friend apophthengomai, which is our friend because it occurred in verse 4. The Spirit kept on giving them to utter, to speak, to pronounce. And this, is again, it's a deponent. So this would be just the aorist indicative middle, third singular, with an active meaning. And he pronounced to them, or he uttered, or probably just spoke to them. Now, here's a cool possible flourish. Here's a possible cool flourish. Dr. Vels himself one day pointed this out to me. And, of course, he would actually know the citation in Smythe's Classical Greek Grammar. That when you have a public speech and direct discourse, at least in some contexts, it's a note of respect by addressing the people as Andres, males, see? As opposed to, according to Smythe, anthropoi, which may be a little bit of a insult. So we might actually render this esteemed Judeans or something like that. So Andres Judaio, esteemed Judeans, and those who are inhabiting Jerusalem, all. So it may be adding a touch of politeness and dignity to the addressees. Esteemed guests, you know, this is the time of year when people say, members of the faculty, you know, Board of Regents, honored guests, blah, blah, blah. And then, please forgive me, proceed to say silly things that nobody remembers anyway. So... you all know the most popular after-dinner commencement-type speaker in history? Socrates, right? His speech was short. See? And it's called the hemlock rhetoric. Well, it's kind of a classical thing, you know? Right, so I'm expecting on some good French idioms from you again today. So you bring them up. So esteemed Judeans and those who inhabit Jerusalem, all of you... the verb is esto. It's an imperative from the linking verb and third person singular. Let this to you be gnostan, known. And now I had to look this up. This is from notizomai, which means to listen attentively, or I think it's translated give ear. You can see the Greek verb. One of the Greek verbs for ear is ous, and then it goes to otos. Which is why the thing that guy sticks in your ear is called an otoscope. Say so. So this notizomai, you can see it in there. give ear to, and then the accusative object, my rhemas, my words. And then he'll explain why, with a gar clause, he thinks they're supposed to give ear. So that's verse 14. Comments, questions?
I think it's kind of interesting that Peter, who comes from this humble background, would speak in a formal manner.
I know. It's like he just picks it up in the atmosphere. How do you speak to a large crowd like this?
Right. Yeah. Maybe sort of like people speak out with
God. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and it's an interesting question of, and of course, part of what's going on is that St. Luke is the one who's recording the substance of the speech. So it's possible, I think it's allowable within our high view of Scripture to say that Luke has stylistically affected, not changed meaning per se, but he does offer it in this fashion. So good. Anything else on verse 14? All right. Verse 15, Ugar hos humes apolambanata hutoi methu uzin estengar hora trite tes hemeras. Allah, tuta esten ta e remenon diatu profetu yoel, etc. So listen up, Peter says, for not as you, somewhat emphatic there, hippolambano can mean a bunch of different stuff, but one of the things it can mean is to suppose or to think something. For not as you are supposing, these are drunk, and we'd smooth it out in English, these are not drunk, from methuo, as you are supposing. And why would that be? For it is the third hour, the day's third hour. Right? The third hour of the day. So that's not what's going on. Rather, verse 16, Allah, this is, and again, note the two accents on tuta, because estin is enclitic, and you would have too many syllables there without an accent. So this is the, and this is from Lego, believe it or not. Ereka is the fourth principal part of Lego, I have said. And this is the fifth principal part, a re mai. And so it's a participle in substantive with the attributive position, a substantive. This is the thing which was said and is still in a said condition, or something like that, through the prophet Joel. And then we get the quotation from Joel 2 and 3, 3 and 1 to 5 in the Septuagint. So, okay, easy enough. Questions, comments? All right, yeah, we're going to make all kinds of progress today. This is, maybe. All right, we'll do verse 17. Kai estai entais escates hemerais, lege hatheas, ech kao apa tu pneumatasmu epi pazan sarka. Kai prophetiusin hoi huioi humon kai hai thigateras humon kai hoi neaniskoi humon o rases apsantai kai hoi presbyteroi humon enipnois enipnias thesantai. That's I kind of had to practice that one in my office. And it will be kind of a Hebraic, a way of speaking. And it will be, just for grins, notice that, as you know, when Nestle Aland thinks we're getting a direct quote, they put the words in italics. So the fact that entis escates hemerais is not in italics means, and this is correct, that it's not in the text of Joel. So Peter actually adds the phrase, in the last days. So, and it will be in the last days, says God says. Now, this is, I had to look this up just to make sure. Ek ke'o is the dictionary form, means to pour out. And this is actually the future. The future acts like a double contract verb or something. Ek ke'o. At any rate, it's just a future indicative active first person singular. I will pour out. And then I was curious about this apa. And so I actually did a little bit of looking. And all I did was I used Bible Works and I looked in, you know, just in the Bible, in the Septuagint and the New Testament. And this is the only place here in just a few verses in Joel that you have ekkeho apa. And I wondered if grammatically it was meaning to say, I will pour out some of my spirit, or again, it's normally translated, I will pour out my spirit, right? So, and you guys think I've forgotten all my Hebrew, and I almost have, but in Joel, it's just the direct object marker. So I'm taking this as just a little bit of an, and what he's doing is he's just quoting the Septuagint of Joel. That's the way the Septuagint runs. So I don't think there's any real difference in meaning intended here. So translate, probably not, I will pour out from my spirit, or I will pour out something from my spirit. But if we assume that the Septuagint translators just did something funny here, the Hebrew is completely clear. It's just shafak et ruhi, right? I will pour out my spirit, just the direct object. So I think that's why it's normally translated that way here. Upon all flesh, and then pretty straightforward, your sons and your thigaters, your daughters, will prophesy, and your young men will see sights, although I think it's normally translated visions, and your Presbyterians, right, your elders, will dream. This was interesting. I actually looked this up in Liddell and Scott. There is an active voice, en hypniadzo, which means to dream, but then Liddell and Scott says without explanation that the middle impassive also means dream. See? So maybe there isn't, maybe you wouldn't say in Greek, a dream was dreamed. It just says middle and passive means to dream something. And it takes a dative, probably because of the N prefixed. So your elders will dream, even though it's a future passive form, will dream dreams. So easy enough. Hebraic, you know, short clause and, short clause and, short clause and, right? When I want to get Dr. Robbie mad, I tell him that Hebrew is easy. Yeah, and it also shows that I don't know what I'm talking about. So, good. Questions? Paul?
I was looking at the quotation in the Old Testament, comparing it.
Yeah.
And it's got a change in order.
Oh, it does. Oh, the phrase orders. Okay.
And wondered what... I mean, it could be a signal that look at this order coming up for the whole of the speech.
Okay, okay.
Sort of...
So the text form here in Acts 2 is different.
Because they would have remembered it.
Well, you'd think so, yeah.
And if he switches around, he's doing it for the reader. Oh, I forgot which way the order goes.
Probably not, yeah. So the question of, if the text form differs in some noticeable way from the Old Testament text form, what's the significance of that? This is Greek Club. We don't do anything significant here, Paul. Actually, you asked a good question, but I didn't notice it, so I'm not sure about that. No, that's all right. Yeah. Don't ever apologize for noticing and knowing something, right? But I don't have anything. Did you investigate it at all? I mean,
no,
just noticed it. Yeah.
Noticed.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Step one is right. Yeah. First, read it and then see what's there. That's right. Okay. Good. Let's keep going. And you know what? We can actually. I think we can just get the whole rest of this quotation because it's not hard. So it's just. Pretty easy. So let's do that, 18 to 21. Kaige epitus dulusmu, kai epitas dulasmu, en tais hemerais ekenais, ekkeo apa tu pneumatasmu, kai prophetuzuzin. kai dozo terata en to urano ano, kai semea epites ges kato, haima kai pir kai atmida kapnu, ha helias metastrafesita eskatas, kai he selene es haima, prin elthein hemeran kiriu tain megalen kai epiphane, kai estai, pas has an epikalesetai ta anima curio sothesetai. So, not too hard. I think gaz, I mean, it's hard to translate. You know, it might at most mean something like indeed there at the beginning. And indeed upon my slaves, male slaves in context, and upon my female slaves, right, in those days. Here's our friend Ekkeo again. I will pour out, take it as direct object, my spirit, and note the lack of italics there. So again, Peter is supplying something. And they will prophesy. And I will give terasses. This is the neuter noun ta teras, which means an awesome thing or a marvel or a wonder. So wonders. And where will you give them? In the sky or in the heaven above, and signs on the earth below, blood, haima, and fire. I had to look up atmis. It means vapor or even steam, you know, that kind of a thought. And kapnas means smoke. So I think the lexicon, this might be an example of a kind of a, well, it is, obviously, it's from the Old Testament, a Hebraic genitive, smoky vapor, right? Or cloudy vapor or something like that. Vapor of smoke, literally. And the sun, now this is from metastrepho, and it's a strong sixth principal part. It's estraphein. So since the future passive is built off the sixth principal part, so metastrafesetai is future indicative passive, third singular. The sun will be changed into darkness. Remember that skatas is neuter. So even though you might get lazy and think it's like logos, and you're thinking, wait a minute, how come that's a nominative? It's not nominative, it's accusative, right? The sun will be turned into darkness and the moon into blood. And when will this happen? Prin plus the infinitive, among other things, can mean before. Before the day of the Lord comes. So hemeron is the accusative subject of the infinitive, elthein. And now we'll modify day. The day of the Lord. Which one would that be? The great and epiphane manifest or evident day of the Lord comes. And, verse 21, it will be pas has an, whoever, everyone, whoever, invokes, epikaleomai is to invoke or call upon the name of the Lord, sothesetai, will be saved. The interesting thing about this quote is that Peter says, this quote is happening now. So it's actually a really good example of how the so-called language of cosmic distress in Old Testament prophecy doesn't always have a literal, visible fulfillment, right? Because there's this strange sound at Pentecost, and there are these tongues of fire and this bizarre, well, what must have seemed bizarre, ability by these Galileans to speak, you know, Cappadocian. But there's no smoke, there's no blood, the moon isn't literally turned into darkness, right? So since I took Dr. Robbie's name in vain just a minute ago, I'll share one of the many insights I've learned from him over the years. He says, when you see this language in the Old Testament, you know what it means? It means Yahweh just showed up. That's what it means. So it's the language of epiphany, right? And so we would say that it's figurative, right? But that just like the guy said, just because it's a metaphor doesn't mean it's not true, right? So
that helps a lot with Jesus' eschatological speech.
Well, it certainly can. Yeah, yeah, especially if you think what I think about it and have gone to the trouble of written an entirely boring book on the darn thing. So, yeah, no, no, this is one of the things about eschatological language and the way, well, the prophets themselves just in their own context, but then the way the New Testament writers quote. The most interesting example, this is a little different, is that this phrase, I think it's from Zechariah, they will look on him whom they have pierced, right? The same author, assuming John wrote both the Gospel and Revelation, he uses the same verse but to refer to different things. Because at the crucifixion, John says this fulfills prophecy, Jesus' death. They will look on him whom they have pierced after the soldier pokes, you know, the sword in Jesus, the spear in Jesus' side. And then in Revelation 1, it seems to refer to the last day. They will look on him whom they have pierced. So, yeah. So it does actually help quite a bit, Will, with the New Testament's quotation of sort of eschatological prophetic material, right? Okay, now we have to get, we're not going to, but we have to get the greatest direct object in history, okay? See, look at how this is fronted. I just think this is great. Verse 20, yeah, 22. Andres Yorsalitai, esteemed Israelites, right? Akusita tus lagus tutus. Listen, hear these words. Now look at this. Accusative. Yezunta nazarion andra apadedegmenon apa tu theu es humas dynamizen kaiterizen kaisemeois hois epoiesen de autu hatheos en meso humon kathos hautoi oidita. Tuton, another accusative, which carries on the first, te horis mene bule kai prognose tu theu edakton diacheros anomon. I mean, it goes on and on. See, and now the last word in verse 23 is the verb, right? See, you anireoed him. You took him away. You killed him, see? But you think this isn't this great? So Jesus, the Nazarene, a man attested by God, toward you with powers and wonders and signs, which God did through him in the midst of you, just as you know. I mean, and then finally you get to the verb. I think Peter wants to emphasize Jesus here. Yeah. So it's a great example. And then he's been emphasizing so much he has to repeat the accusative. This one, this guy, that's right. By the appointed will and foreknowledge of God, let's see. Oh, I didn't even get this far in the verse, but I was just overwhelmed by the accusative. So, verse 22 is the direct object, the whole thing, with all of its modifying relative clauses and everything, is the direct object. You killed whom God raised by loosing the pains of death, and so forth. But it's time to stop, so we will stop with the Easter direct object. I guess by the time we meet again, Christ won't be risen because it won't be the Easter season anymore. Oh, wait, he's risen all the time. I remember that now. Thank you very much.